veteran. An advanced degree from the School of Hard Knocks and continual opportunity. America's fastest growing radio talk Jim show. Sumter. This is the Sound of Freedom. This is the Jim Sumter Show.
Yes, indeed, this is the Jim Sumter Show. My name is Scott Robison. I'm sitting in for Jim today while he takes care of some business this afternoon. Instead of doing the local here show here at KTKK, AM 630 K-Talk, we do have open lines in Salt Lake and South Davis counties. You can reach us at 254-5855. In Utah County, the number is 470-5855. And in Weber, in North Davis County, you can reach us at 670-5855. Of course, you do have to do that 10-digit dialing thing now, so area code 801 comes in front of all of those numbers. Again, my name is Scott Robison. By day, a computer programmer, and by early afternoon, I guess, occasionally, talk show host. Used to work here at K-Talk back in 2003 through 2005. I was employed here. I worked on the computer systems, as you might imagine. I'm responsible for some of the automation programming and making sure that things happen at the right time. Sometimes they don't, because things do go wrong, unfortunately. But for the most part, the computer keeps things on schedule. When I was working here, I also did a nightly show from 9 to 11 p.m., Monday through Friday, where I talked, much like we are right now, on just, you know, social commentary, political commentary. I would discuss anything that you guys wanted to, which is pretty much how I feel most comfortable running the show. For me, a talk show is not just about the host always talking. It's about getting the ideas from the community over the air so that we can actually have a reasonable discussion about the topics. So to that end, I do encourage you to call. When I was doing my nightly show and the weekend show on computers and technology, I always did what I called the 60-second guarantee. And that was simply, if you call, I guarantee to put you on the air for at least 60 seconds. And as we demonstrated in this last hour, I will keep you on for quite a bit longer, if as long as I feel like things are interesting. But, you know, unlike some show hosts who will bring you on the air, you'll say two words, and then they go, "You're stupid," and hang up on you. I'm not going to do that to you. Well, unless you really, really deserve it. But, no, I will give you at least 60 seconds to make your point. And if you've engaged me after that 60 seconds, I'll give you more time, and we will talk things through. You know, Sovereign was talking about how, you know, he does kind of view the world through conspiratorial lenses at times. Not all the time, not in everything, but, you know, I don't know, that kind of drives me crazy. It's not that I don't think that there are conspiracies out there, because obviously, there, you know, if you look up the dictionary definition of conspiracy, there are conspiracies. People conspire to do things all the time. The nature of what most people will call a conspiracy is that they can never prove it. They will never, ever be able to provide real evidence that what they think is a conspiracy really happened at all. And that's kind of the beauty of it, because it's like anybody who disagrees with their view on the conspiracy automatically, you know, obviously they're part of the conspiracy or something like that, or they're just not smart enough to see what the conspiracy is. So, I don't know, talking about conspiracies probably isn't my cup of tea, but if you would like to call and talk about something like that, I'll give you at least 60 seconds to make your point. You know, we were talking a lot this last hour about the health insurance reform, and it's not that I think that it is pure evil, that it can't ever do any good. It's just a matter of, is it the purview of the federal government to enact legislation that tells each and every American that they must purchase a product from a third party, you know, from a private corporation that they may not want, that they may not need. Now, I'm not trying to suggest that people who buy health insurance are stupid for wasting their money. Far from it. I recognize that, you know, even healthy people can have situations come up in their lives where health insurance would be a very valuable thing for them to have been paying for. And that the way insurance programs work is that you are gambling, basically, that you won't need it or that you will need it, but hoping maybe you won't have to make a claim against it. And the insurance companies, by taking all of the premiums together and putting them into a big pile of money, can then, you know, pay out for the expenses of one person who really needed it. You know, they had a lot of health care expenses that they didn't expect to have, while other people who didn't need it so much know that it's there when and if they need it. But insurance is not supposed to be about giving you everything that you need. Okay, let's think for a second. Automobile insurance. We are required by law to have a certain level of auto insurance, liability insurance, if we choose to operate a vehicle in a given state. Now, and even that's a state-by-state thing. The federal government hasn't said, oh, you know what, this is a big problem nationwide. People are getting into accidents and unable to pay their bills because the person who's at fault wasn't insured. So we, the federal government, are going to require everybody to buy automobile insurance, you know, just in case maybe they're hit by a car or something like that. That doesn't work out that way. But they would have us believe that health insurance, even though not everybody needs health insurance, should be the same way, that everybody should be forced to buy it no matter what. That just seems disingenuous. And then they would have us believe that in the case of health care, we should pay our premiums to a health insurance company, and that any time we need to go to the doctor, or we need to go have a prescription filled, or we need some surgery, or whatever it is that we need, they would have us believe that the best way to do that, rather than finding the doctor that you want to use, negotiating a payment, and then paying that out of your own pocket, is that the insurance company should get the bill and then pay that in your behalf. And then at the same time, they shouldn't be making a profit. It should be a non-profit thing. Well, I have a hard time with that. I think everybody's entitled to make a reasonable profit. And I'm not prepared to define exactly what a reasonable profit is, but I suspect that an industry like health insurance that makes, last time I checked a few months ago, about 3.3% on average, the average insurance company makes about 3.3% profit. That was like the number 85th industry in the list of industries. So there were 84 other industries making more profit than health insurers. And yet, we're to believe that health insurers are evil because they don't pay every last claim that comes through. Look, I'm in a situation. For those of you who have never seen me, which would be most of you because radio is not a visual medium, I am what they call morbidly obese. I am very fat. And as a result, it's somewhat hereditary. I'm not trying to blame it all on my genes, but obviously there are genetic considerations to be made here. And, you know, my mother was obese, my father's obese, my sister's obese. The only people in my family that are not obese are my dogs, okay? I have two little poodles. They're like 6.5 pounds. They look nothing like us because that's how it is. But I am definitely the largest person in my family. Just to put it all out there, a couple days ago, weighed myself, 422 pounds. Okay, not something I'm really proud of, but it's just something for the last decade I've kind of plateaued at this, you know, 420-pound level. As a result, I have other medical conditions that are associated with obesity. There's a procedure out there called a gastric bypass. And a gastric bypass for those who may not know, I mean, probably everybody does, but with a gastric bypass, they go in, they split your stomach into two pieces, and they reroute your intestines so that you have a small stomach that you eat, you know, where the food you eat goes into the small pouch, and then it goes into your intestines, and it bypasses most of your stomach and a large portion of your intestines. As a result, you are not able to absorb the nutrients from the food as easily, which greatly decreases the amount of food that you can consume because of the smaller stomach, and it also greatly decreases the amount of benefit you get from the food that you do eat. And for some people, this gastric bypass procedure can not only save your life in that you can lose a lot of weight, okay, but it can also cure or at least greatly reduce the severity of the symptoms of multiple diseases. Diabetes has like a 90 to 95% success rate at being completely cured. Type 2 diabetes, adult onset, what they used to call adult onset diabetes, can be cured through a gastric bypass. And even if it's not cured, it can be so greatly diminished in its severity that you no longer have to take nearly as much medication. It can lower your blood cholesterol levels. It can lower your blood pressure as a result. It can do lots of things. There are many things that can be greatly changed and reduced with a gastric bypass. Anyway, my point in bringing this up is that, you know, my family has an insurance plan from a particular insurance company. Who it is not important. But gastric bypass, also known as bariatric surgery, is not a benefit that comes with our health insurance plan. So, you know, we've talked to the insurance company about it, and what they have told us is that they actually do offer a benefit for bariatric surgery. But it has to be something that your employer, in the case of our insurance, because it's provided as a benefit through the employer, if your employer has paid for the coverage for bariatric surgery, then you can take advantage of the benefit. But in our particular case, because the employer has not paid for this benefit, they do not feel that they need to provide the benefit. That makes kind of sense to me. I don't know about you, but let's say that you went to a grocery store and you paid $10 for some milk and some bread and some pasta. Well, they don't really, I mean, they will let you walk out the store with the things that you paid for, but they're not going to let you walk out with, you know, a carton of cigarettes or beer or something like that, because that was not part of the contract. You did not pay for those things, therefore you do not get to leave the store with those things. It's the exact same thing with the insurance. We paid for the insurance. We were given a packet of information that says, here are all the things that are covered in your insurance plan, and we're free to take advantage of the benefits that we've been given. Why should the insurance company have to provide a benefit for a surgery that they told us they would not cover? Well, it looks to me, maybe not this exact example, but with what the federal government is trying to do with insurance, is that they're going to require insurance companies to take you no matter any pre-existing conditions, and that the insurance company is going to have to pay for pretty much any procedures or, you know, drugs or whatever that the doctor says you need. Now, can they do this? Yes, they can, but it's going to mean greatly increased costs for everybody. Because the insurance company, even if they make zero profit, still has to stay in business. This is the Jim Sumpter Show. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Columbia. Just a few of the schools Jim's never attended. which is probably why he makes so much sense.
Jim Sumpter!
This is the Jim Sumpter Show. My name is Scott Robison, sitting in for Jim this afternoon. It is 23 minutes past the hour, and we do have lines available. You're free to call and comment on our current topics, healthcare and oil and all sorts of stuff like that. Or if you've got something else you'd like to bring up, I would be more than happy to talk to you about it. The numbers are 254-5855. 470-5855 or 670-5855. Let's go to line 3 with Tom. Tom, you are on the air.
Yeah, I can barely hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Yeah, you know, when I get liability on my car, I know it's going to cover anything I hit. It's a person or a dog or something, and I know that. When I get health insurance, I want health cover. I don't know what I'm going to have. I don't know if I'm going to have an infection, if I had a pre-existing, my grandfather, I don't know. So they tweak that, so they make a lot of money, although you say no, the CEOs make a lot of millions, but they don't want to pay my health situation if it's something that is not covered, like you say. I want health insurance, period. Whatever comes up, they have to pay for it, because I'm insured, like a liability. Whatever I hit, they pay for. Same with health insurance. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. I'm not a magician. I don't know what's going to come to me. I want health insurance. No. They want to pinpoint the things they want to insure. That's the problem here.
Well, okay. And I understand your point, and you're right. Okay. When I say that the health insurance industry makes, you know, on average, 3.3% profit margin, I'm talking about the actual money that would go back into, you know, dividends for the shareholders or what have you. Obviously, there are executives at these companies that are making obscene amounts of money. And I think that the shareholders of those companies and the board of directors need to get their acts together, because they're the ones that have that level of control and say, no, you don't get these obscene profits. But
well, they get those profits because they don't pay my health problems. See, the CEOs tell them, you do this, you do that. Don't pay this. No, he's pre-existing. Don't pay the $50,000 surgery. So they save a lot of money. That's how they pay the CEOs, because it's convenient. That's why they pay him. That's because they know how to do things and screw us, the little people, when we become sick. We don't know what we're going to have. Well, this is the problem in this country. You go anywhere else, and they'll say, okay, I'm going to need surgery. You may have to wait a couple of months, but make sure you're going to get the surgery done. But
well,
here, no, you're pre-existing. Out.
Well,
they don't want sick people, and they're into the health business, and they don't want sick people. See?
No.
They
see,
want healthy people.
And there is exactly, Tom, is where you're wrong, is because that – you're buying into what the federal politicians would have you believe. Now, I'm not saying that there's not some need for reform on something. What I am saying, though, is that these health insurers are not part – they're not the health care system. They are just money people. Do you know how we got into the system? Okay, let me start again here. We have insurance companies that insure different things. You have some companies like Lloyd's of London that will insure just about anything that you could ever bring to them. Then we have automobile insurance companies, and we have health insurance companies. I'm sure there are other types of homeowners insurance policies. There's all sorts of different kinds of insurance policies that you can get. Now, with your automobile, you have liability insurance, and you're right. If you hit someone and you're at fault, they will pay up to a certain amount. But they have an express limit of how much they will pay because you were in an accident, right? Like if you hit someone and you have the state minimum liability insurance of, say, $25,000, and let's say that you hit a really expensive Rolls Royce that costs $1 million, the insurance company's liability is finished at $25,000, and the person you hit can come after you and sue you directly for the balance that was not paid.
Yeah, but at the same token, he's already insured for an uninsured motorist with limited amounts, you know?
There's no legal requirement that he do that. I mean, it would be smart for him to do that, but the reality of the situation is that he does not, your insurance company when you have liability insurance, they will still only pay a certain amount. And there are scenarios, probably, in which they can get out of making a payment, depending upon the exact details of the situation. That's the, you know, that big stack of papers that you had to sign when you got the policy. Those are all of the restrictions.
Yeah, but I know that. Well, but in my health, I don't know.
Well, no.
An unknown. The health insurance company is going to say, well, what are you? How are you? I mean, or they check me out and. Well, you know, why are they going to turn me down? You're pre-existent or something. Then they're in the wrong business.
Hey, Tom, I don't know if you can hang on. We're going into another break. I would be happy to talk about this with you some more, but I've got a break for commercials. This is the Jim Sumpter Show. I'm Scott Robison. 254-470 or 670-5855.
This is the Sound of Freedom. This is the Jim Sumpter Show.
And welcome back. It is 32 minutes past the hour on the Jim Sumpter Show. My name is Scott Robison. I would like to thank you for tuning in this afternoon and listening. We do have lines open if you would like to call in. Feel free. I'll talk about any topic. 801-254-5855 is the number in Salt Lake City. In Provo, the number is 801-470-5855. And in Weber, in North Davis County, you can reach us at 801-670-5855. Okay, so we were talking to Tom in the last segment. He was on a cell phone, and I guess he felt he couldn't hang on any longer. I'm sorry, Tom. I would love to talk to you about this more, and I understand, though, that those cell phone fees can get high fast, so you don't want to waste the minutes on hold and everything. I understand what Tom is saying about how, you know, he wants a policy that will cover anything. And you know what? I think that those policies probably are available. I don't know for sure. But the problem is that the more that your policy covers, the more that policy is going to cost you. Okay? That's how insurance works. I started to say before the last break, you have all these different kinds of insurance companies. You have auto insurance. You have homeowners insurance. You can get renter's insurance if you don't own the property that you're living in, but you want to make sure that your belongings are insured against loss. There's health insurance. Places like Lloyd's of London will insure Mary Hart's legs or, you know, whatever. There's all sorts of things that can be insured, and we, you know, have the obvious ones that we deal with in our day-to-day, you know, life. So he's talking about how liability insurance on your car works, and they cover anything. It's like, well, the reality is that they don't really cover anything, okay? There are some things that your auto liability insurance is not going to cover. For example, if you're in an accident with with another person and you're the one at fault, you have a certain limit of insurance. There's numbers on your auto insurance policy saying, like, you know, you have a $25,000 limit and a $50,000 limit and another $25,000 limit. The typical policy has those three numbers, and most people just don't understand what those numbers mean. The first number, for example, $25,000, is the maximum amount that your insurance company will pay to any one person that was involved in the auto accident. So let's say that you hit a car and you injure somebody so they're out of work for a year. And let's say that their income was $100,000 a year. Well, if all you have is a $25,000 limit, but they had a $100,000 loss, your insurance company's only going to pay the first $25,000 to that person, and they will either have to write off the remaining $75,000, or they can come after you and try to take your home or attach your wages or get a judgment or whatever. The second number, which is often like double the first number, is the maximum amount your insurance company will pay out for a single accident to all parties. So let's say that you hit a car of four people, and all four people were making, had a $100,000 loss. you've just caused $400,000 worth of damage and loss to somebody, but your insurance company is only going to pay out $50,000. So again, those people could come after you for another $350,000. Now, you can always buy more insurance, but the more insurance you want, the more you're going to pay. But unfortunately, the politicians of this country have gotten us to believe that you should be able to get insurance for a cheap, affordable price that will cover everything you could ever need. Does that really seem like a business model that is ever going to work? Unfortunately, politicians have this expectation that they can, you know, they can print money on demand and that they can spend money that hasn't even been earned yet because they can defer the cost to future generations. That's not how business works. And for people to expect that they can get a health insurance plan that does all these things just is not reasonable. Plus, you know, health insurance originally was just there to make sure that you did not lose a lot of money because of an unexpected health expense. But back during World War II, when there were some wage freezes and limitations on what you could compensate people monetarily, they enacted legislation that allowed companies to pay for your health insurance. And instead of it just being health insurance, it wound up being like prepaid health care, so that, you know, even though they couldn't give you another $1,000 raise or something like that, they could give you this insurance plan that was worth $1,000 to you so that you didn't have to pay for it out of your own pocket. And over the last 60 years, 70 years, the health insurance legislation has evolved into something where we just expect health insurance to cover, you know, if we have to go to the doctor for a runny nose, we expect our insurance to pay for that. In real life, that is something that is called a living expense, and you would have to pay for that out of your own pocket. Unfortunately, the reason that we are in this mess that we're in today is because Congress has created these stupid health insurance plans in the first place that are really for prepaid insurance. Can you imagine paying for gasoline for your car through your auto insurance? It's ridiculous, but that's exactly the same sort of thing we're doing with health care. Caller, you're on the air. What's your first name?
Stacy.
Hey, Stacy. What would you like to talk about?
Well, you're exactly right on the insurance issue. Insurance is the wrong vehicle to take care of daily health needs. But, you know, you mentioned dollars being created out of thin air. If people don't like that, they need to wake up and throw out the Federal Reserve System, because that's the entity that's creating dollars out of thin air. And if they're not willing to do that, they need to stop complaining. Now, you started the hour with taking an interesting jab at conspiracy, which people like to do, and then they like to take that jab, and then they like to run away, and they love to claim that, oh, you can't prove that this conspiracy exists. Well, sure you can. If you go to YouTube and just watch 9 seconds of video on World Trade Center 7's collapse, 9 seconds. If you got 9 seconds to spare, there's your proof, unless you're blind. There is proof. Building 7 falls at the rate of free fall and the afternoon of 9/11, clearly from controlled demolition. It clearly took them weeks to wire that building, at least, maybe even months. And there's your proof. People love to deny that, but there's your proof. And, people set it up so that people like me have to prove to you, but you can't prove to someone else something is true if they refuse to believe it.
Well, and I also can't prove a negative. I can't prove that something didn't happen. So that's why the burden of proof is on people who make a claim to try to prove it.
You just twisted it again. I'm not asking you to prove a negative. I'm asking you to look at 9 seconds of video and see the obvious fact. Unless you are blind, you can see that a building is falling beautifully straight down. Okay, only a blind person would not be able to see that. Beautifully, one of the most perfect controlled demolitions I've ever seen. If you ever watch video of other controlled demolitions, they're not as clean as Building 7, to be honest with you. And if you look, you can see the center section of Building 7 collapsing first, where they took out the center supports. Now, these tiny little fires couldn't take out those concrete center supports. Steel frame buildings do not fall from fire. There was a recent big fire where it was a steel frame building. It didn't collapse. There's your proof right there. But, you know, if you've got a nation full of people that just want to put blinders on and refuse to believe something, frankly, I think it's more difficult to be hard-headed like that. I think it's easier to see the truth, accept the truth, believe the truth. And I guess using the word believe is the wrong word, because it doesn't take much faith or belief to see this 9 seconds of video and see the obvious. It just doesn't. It's right there in front of your face. There's no need to get into issues related to the Pentagon. There's no need to get into what some people want to talk about weird things that supposedly attached to the bottom of the airplanes that hit the towers. There's no need to get into any of that, because your smoking gun is Trade Center 7. And I talk to people all the time who I say Trade Center 7, and they go, what's that? And then they start assuming that I'm talking about one of the Twin Towers, and then I have to do a facepalm in disbelief at how lazy and ignorant the American people are. And in order to refuse to believe that there's conspiracy, you have to really go to a lot of effort, because the evidence is overwhelming and obvious. And the way in which people in the media treat people who bring this up, like if you try to bring this up on Sean Hannity's show, he will treat you like you just encouraged child pornography. That's how he'll treat you.
Yeah, well, I'm not Sean Hannity.
Well, and I thank you for that, and I thank you for giving me time to say this. I really do, and you are much better to do that than you made yourself sound in the beginning of the show, because you made yourself sound like you're just kind of hard-headed when it comes to conspiracy.
No, what I am about conspiracy is I want to see actual evidence that has not been summarily refuted by engineers and scientists. Now, I understand, okay, number one, I was talking about conspiracies in general. I wasn't talking about any one particular thing. And I think that you and I could probably both agree that there are some whack-out, stupid, idiotic ideas out there about different things. In fact, there's this one video that somebody shared with me on YouTube about some woman who was recording her lawn while there was a little sprinkler watering her lawn, and the sunlight came through the water droplets coming from the sprinkler and made a prism rainbow effect. And this woman was either absolutely pulling the wool over people's eyes, or it sure seemed to me that she sincerely believed that there was some sort of a contaminant in the water for something like that to happen. Now, I think that we can agree that, yes, there are real conspiracies out there. In fact, I think I said as much at the beginning. There obviously are conspiracies, because all that you need for a conspiracy is a couple of people to agree to take some course of action in secret and not share that information with other parties. Now, did World Trade Center 7 come down through a controlled demolition? I can't say that it does or does not, or did or did not, because I was not there. I cannot see it. I've heard people claim, like you, that it had to have been a controlled demolition, and you would have to be stupid to not understand that. And I've heard the other side make the same sort of claims. I'm not sure, I'm not sure where to go with that. Hang on just a minute. We'll get back to you. This is the Jim Sumpter Show. I'm Scott Robison. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
This is the Jim Sumpter Show.
We're coming into the final stretch of the Jim Sumpter Show for this Thursday afternoon. It is 48 minutes past the hour. My name is Scott Robison. I'll be sitting in, for another 12 minutes or so. The numbers, if you would like to give us a call and talk about whatever, are 254-5855, 470-5855, or in the north, 670-5855. Let's go ahead and get back to our caller. We were talking about World Trade Center 7, and then we were talking a little bit off the air, and And, you know, just to kind of, I don't know, give everybody else the basis for where I have a problem with a lot of the conspiracy theories. Again, not all of them. You know, I mean, it's difficult to prove a conspiracy unless you have the smoking gun. And maybe World Trade Center 7 is the smoking gun for a conspiracy. I unfortunately cannot refute that in 11 minutes, so I'm going to have to defer to you on this. I do know that there are certain things that, for example, using the example that he didn't want to go to of the Pentagon, you know, one of the conspiracy sites showed a picture of a piece of the fuselage from the American Airlines flight that hit the Pentagon, and it was sitting out in the middle of the field, and it was colored blue. And unfortunately, you know, that was proof positive that this was not an American Airlines flight that ran in, you know, flew into the Pentagon, because American Airlines flights or planes are silver. They don't paint them other than just the logo on the side, and there's no blue on it. So therefore, this is proof positive that it's the conspiracy. And I look at this, and I'm going, you stupid moron. It's a bright blue sky.
Right.
And this is a piece of silver metal. This is commonly called a mirror, and, you know, it's just reflecting the color that's there in the sky. Now, that person I will definitely call a moron, whoever it was that said that piece of a fuselage proved that it's all part of a conspiracy. They're just intellectually stupid. I mean, there's no other way to describe somebody like that. Now, World Trade Center 7, I understand, is a different scenario. I will be happy to look at it a little bit more later, you know, and see if I can come to the same conclusion that you do. I'm sure I've seen the footage, but I'm also sure I've read things from other people explaining how it's possible. Kind of like the moon landings. You know, I believe that the moon landings really happened. I know some people don't, and they pull out things like how the star, you know, you can't see the stars or the reflections are wrong or whatever. And yet I see comments from professionals in their field saying, well, actually, that's entirely possible that it could be this way. So I don't know. Go ahead. I'm rambling now. So,
well, thank you. I really do appreciate you letting me have time to say this. The two biggest mistakes people make when related to conspiracy issues is they generalize and say conspiracy in general, and they lump all conspiracies into one. And then the second biggest mistake is they focus on things that are just too difficult to say yay or nay on, such as the Pentagon. And frankly, I'll just say it straight out. We just don't know enough about what happened at the Pentagon to really entertain much of a conversation. I mean, it is suspicious that they took so many years to release certain security camera footage, and there's some suspicious things in the camera footage, but there's just not enough there. And when people spend all their time about 9/11 talking about the Pentagon, or most of their time, I start wondering if they're a CIA disinformation agent, because there are a lot of nutty stuff out there that has clearly come from the CIA psychological operations wing. For example, on another subject, one of the things that they put out is this nonsense about alien bodies at Area 51. We all know that's nonsense. We all know that's garbage, but it's an obvious distraction. And you brought up the moon
landing. I don't know, there's plenty of people that don't know that that's garbage. There's plenty of people that really believe that sincerely and genuinely.
Well, I'm not so sure about it. I think they treat it as entertainment. I really have never met a person who honestly believes that there's alien bodies at Area 51. I never have. And we like to believe that there are people that believe that, because we'd like to have fun and make fun of them. But
no,
I
definitely have met those people.
Really?
I'm not saying that there's not people out there who don't push it because they've got a book to sell or something like
that.
And obviously that is definitely it. But you know what? There's a market for these books, and it's not just because there are people that are wanting to be entertained by these, you know, funny stories.
Well, you'll have fun with this. As far as the moon landing goes, you know that there's death threats for anybody that sets foot on Area 51. They've publicized that for years. You can't go on the property.
Oh, well,
and
I mean, there's death threats for just about any military installation, mind you.
They go out of their way to publicize the Area 51 death threats, though. But I have concluded that the evidence shows that for three reasons. The radiation is impossible to pass through, and computer technology was not possible in 1969. And what they are actually protecting is not alien bodies at Area 51. They're protecting the landscape. They don't want photographers to get on there because they know that if people roamed around there and took pictures, they could compare the, quote, moon landing pictures to the landscape. They're just protecting the landscape. People assume conspiracies must be super complicated, but human beings are not as complicated as we would like to think. The moon landing nonsense is really quite simple. It was fabricated. It was turned into a movie to further the space race with the Russians. And there was a very cryptic interview that Neil Armstrong gave fairly recently, where it's clear he would like to come clean with the truth. He knows obviously what happened. They just circled the globe a few times while the government played a movie over the air. And he knows it, but I think he doesn't want to give up his place in history. I think he likes having little kids worship him as being the first man supposedly on the moon. And I think that would be very tempting to hold on to.
Well, I can see your point. I think it really happened. I think that there were too many moon missions for them to all be fabricated. But on that note, we've got to go to our last break. This is the Jim Sumpter Show. I'm Scott Robison. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Still legal to listen to in 57 of the 59 Obama states of America. This is the Jim Sumpter Show.
Okay, welcome back for this, the final segment of today's Jim Sumpter Show on AM 630 K-Talk. My name is Scott Robison. It's been great sitting in with you these last couple of hours. I'm not even going to bother giving out the phone numbers again because it's pretty pointless. We've got like, 80 seconds maybe before the music comes on telling me it is time to leave. In speaking to the last caller, and I'm sorry, caller, I've forgotten your name, because I have very short-term memory. But in speaking to him off the air, I told him I was going to give out my email address. So here it is. If you would like to communicate with me off the air, because I'm only here every couple, 2 or 3 or 5 months, it's been 5 months since my last visit, I would be more than happy to communicate with you. I'm on Facebook, Scott Dale Robison. I'm on Twitter, Scottopolis blog is my handle on Twitter. And my email address, the shortest one, would be scott@isdr.net. That's Scott at, I as in India, S as in Scott, D as in Dale, R as in Robison, .net. So I would be more than happy to discuss things with you guys off the air. Like I said, Facebook, Twitter, email, they're all good. And in the meantime, I've had a great time today. Thank you, Jim, for inviting me. I was afraid this might be an elaborate April Fool's prank, but it was not. So thank you very much. Take care.